Well, I'd like to welcome everybody to the Thursday night House of Prayer call. This is the 10th day of March, 2022, so they say. And we have these calls every other week, so the next call will be the 24th of March. We do not have a lineup or a special guest, but we will announce it through the email. If you're not receiving email communications from the House of Prayer, please notify me. I'm Daniel Joseph at protonmail.com. I am Daniel Joseph at protonmail.com. IamDanieljoseph at protonmail.com. Getting that out of the way, the House of Prayer is a spiritual assembly of spiritual peers that believe themselves into the House of Prayer by their belief and trust in Jesus Christ, being part of the House of Prayer. And he said, "My Father's house shall be called the House of Prayer for all people." The House of Prayer is the ecclesiastical body that enables us to freely meet and assemble and talk about things of spiritual nature. In this particular House of Prayer call, we speak about getting the boot off our neck considering the passage in Isaiah 58:6, which is our motto of the House of Prayer call, to loose the band of wickedness, to undo the heavy burden, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. That's a tall order, and we are considering it a mission and our burden to do such things as getting these boots off our neck and living as free men and women as God intended for us. So with that in mind, tonight's call has been previously advertised discussing the issues of the name. Now, I'm not going to speak in the beginning. We have three special guests and I've given them, allotted them 20 minutes apiece. I will give you a when it's time for your 20 minutes to be up so you can encapsulate your thoughts so we can engage the next speaker and then the next speaker, and then we can have a free-for-all after that. I may have some things to say. Our regular David Horowitz may have some things to say. Hopefully John may have some things to say, and perhaps Ed, if he's on tonight, will have some things to say on the subject of the name. Special guests tonight I'll let them introduce themselves. Some of them would like to discuss what their name is in the public recording, the way they want to call their name. Since we're talking about the name, I'll let them name themselves. So I know that Darren doesn't have a problem with me calling him Darren, so he's first up out of the on the lineup here tonight, and he'll be starting here at 6:40 Central Time with his understanding of how he uses the name and what he has done on relation to the legal name. So, Darren, if you are ready, you've got your bat in your hand, and you're ready to go up on the batter cage, I'm ready to turn the mic over to you and give you your 20 minutes. Are you ready to go?
Okay, very good. Thanks. Thanks, Darrell.
You're welcome, Darren.
You know, through years and, I won't say, countless inquiries, and a lot of us, we learn through our trials and errors, and I've learned a great deal in regard to the name. And where there's a different methodology, just because I have one method that doesn't discard anybody else that does it in a different way, because I'm sure even Harold probably does things a little bit different than the way I do, but sometimes there's different ways to skin a cat, okay? In my opinion, the name itself, now, of course, a lot of people, they use the name that they say, well, it's on a birth certificate. My contention is that's not your name. That name doesn't belong to you. You didn't create that document. I believe what that is actually a registered unincorporated organization. This was actually cited by the Federal Judiciary Center in 2001, and they are basically a well-known authority that's recognized by all the U.S. courts and by Congress. You can look up 28 U.S.C. 1332. It's also in 620, 629, where what they did is at this particular show in July of 2001, they were talking about UCC-9 and bankruptcy, which was primarily UCC-9 as security interest. And it was interesting where they had some very special guests on there. They had law professor Linda Rush, and they had federal judge Bruce Martell. They also had an attorney, Edward Smith, and as well as the chief judge, William Hillman of Massachusetts. And during their conversation, of course, it's a training session, over an hour, And what they were basically talking about, and what Linda Rush first started coming to say, she said, getting the correct legal name of the registered organization means a registered organization is an organization where the state maintains a public record of the organization's name or must maintain a public record of the organization's name. And shortly after that, Bruce Martell came in and he said, it's referred to when the state issues a birth certificate. When I was shocked when he said that. And later on, she said, you must use the name that's on those organizational documents. Well, if you actually look up registered organization, that's actually in the UCC 9-102, subsection 71, that says a registered organization means an organization organized solely under the law of a single state or the United States by filing of a public organic record with the issuance of a public organic record by or an enactment of legislation by the state or the United States. The term includes a business trust that is formed or organized under the law or single state if the statute of the state governing business trusts require that of the business trust organic record to be filed in the state. You could also look up the term, of course, with the birth certificate. They refer to that as a vital record. Well, if you look on the online legal dictionary Black second, a vital record says a document, record, or file in any format with the information essential and necessary to create and organize operations and survivals of an organization. Didn't say child, didn't say infant, didn't say anything like that. You get in, and of course, a lot of people like to refer to the name that's on the certificate. They call it a birth certificate. But if you go to Collins English Dictionary, the term birth also means coming into existence of something. Doesn't mean exactly a child all the time. It can, but it doesn't always mean that. So my contention is then I did a great deal of record requests through the city of New York, where I was born, the state of New York. And basically, a lot of the times they just would not answer me. They wouldn't answer because what I wanted to get was actually a copy of, I wanted to see what was on the back of that document, of the original certificate. And because most of us receive a certified copy. Well, if you look at the term date, even in Blackstone Commentary 304, it means a deed or written instrument was made. When a deed or written instrument was made, that's what the term date means. A certificate in Merriam-Webster Dictionary means a document evidencing ownership or debt. There's also another term used. They call it an apotka, which is under Roman law, means a transcript or counterpart of the instrument called an apotka, where it's signed by the debtor and then delivered to the creditor. Well, the only signature on a certificate is typically the registrar's particular signature, which is normally just a stamp. And if you go into even the term matrix, the term, like we've all seen in the movie Matrix, but actually that does have a legal definition. It says in civil law, the protocol or first draft of a legal instrument from which all copies are taken. There was something interesting that really jumped out at me is when I looked up the term certified copy. And it was defined as a copy of a document signed and certified as a true copy by the officer to whose custody the original is entrusted. So what does that mean? Who's holding the original then? It's got to be the registrar. That means they've given you a certified copy. Now, typically, if you go into 76 AmJur 2D Trust, Section 258, the creation of a trust places the legal title in the trustee and the equitable title with the beneficiary. That means you're holding a certified copy, means you're holding the legal title. You're not even holding that. Now, of course, like I said, there's different ways that can be rebutted. There was also another interesting case in regard to title where it gets very confusing because a lot of people always say, well, that's my name or this is that. I don't believe that that name that's on the certificate is yours. I don't believe you. I believe it's. But there was a case, Eisen versus Zimmerman. It said that the test of whether a title misleads is whether it would be deceived the mind of an ordinary person used to the common meaning of the language, not the mind of the precisionist used to technical refinements of terms. So once again, it's that document itself. Is it a registered organization? And that's what my contention is, because upon doing all these record requests, I actually had the opportunity, I think I said this before on one of the shows, I actually called the Division of Corporations through the State Department, and I kept asking them about a registered certificate. So we were talking a while, and I said, well, the registered certificate I'm referring to is a birth certificate. And what he told me, he says, oh, yeah, he goes, a birth certificate's created to form a business. And basically the state is forming a business in your name. The thing is, you don't have any contention to that name. It's not your name. Now, a lot of people say, well, there is a difference, and you can see this in various cases, is that the Christian name is different from the surname, where the surname did not come into existence until about the 11th century. Because if you think about it, even in biblical times, they were all known by basically their first name. I'll give you an example, like Jesus. It wasn't like Jesus Bernstein or anything like that. His name was Jesus. He was the son of Joseph and Mary and of the tribe Judah. That was basically, of course, they called him, Ben-Yosef. But typically it was the first name. A lot of times I filed several federal cases, and I used a single name, but I put three dots after it, which is known as an ellipsis, or what's known as an incomplete instrument. Only I can say what those three dots mean. You can see that actually comes from the Greek transcript, but it's actually also in UCC. I think it's UCC 3-111-115, and it talks about an incomplete instrument. So you could sign it, but only you could say what that is. Now, what I did is after constantly bombarding the city of New York with all these different record requests, finally the chief attorney came back to me, and he wrote to me. He goes, "You don't own any of your records." He goes, "We maintain all custody of the records, and you don't own them. You don't own your records," is what he said, which I thought was kind of an oxymoron, because if they're my records, then I do own them. So they can't be my records. They're their records. Which actually said to me, there's no nexus between me and that name. So upon that, and upon getting the other information, I actually went through an ecclesiastical tribunal in California, and I did what was known as a special name change. Of course, as it even says in common law, a man could change his name as long as it's not for a misleading or a deceptive intent. You could change it at will. So what I did, I kept the first name, the Christian name, but I changed the last name because I believe that's the one that's on the certificate. I believe that that has absolutely nothing to do with me. It's not my certificate. I believe what you're doing, you are servicing that registered organization as a financial manager, which I found that in the Department of Labor statistics under a specific code. And it made perfect sense to me. So then what I did, I applied for a special name change. And there, why I say special means private. General means public. And within the petition of getting the name change, there was no conveyance. You know, where most people, where they'll do a general name change, everything goes from the old name to the new name. And there's numerous famous people that have done that. From Lew Alcindor to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, Madonna, Donovan, Prince, they all did these different, P. Diddy, they all did these general name changes. But they were general because everything conveyed to the new name. With me, it stopped where it was. Once it did, I filed an affidavit through the paper that published it for 4 weeks, gave notice, also made a public record of it. Upon that, though, with that name that's on the birth certificate, I registered it as an assumed name. And I think Harold and I talked about this in length before, is that we registered it through the state of Minnesota because Minnesota, I think, is the only state. There might be another one or two, but Minnesota is the only state that I'm aware of is that the assumed name is that you can register it and not be the owner, which that gives you the title of like being a registered agent. Same type of capacity, same type of status. But you're not the owner of that because you don't own, just like what the attorney told me, you don't own that certificate. You don't own your records. So they can, and that's why I'm saying it's not my records. And of course, there's numerous cases, a lot of people say, well, you know, if it's spelt in all caps, that's a fiction or it doesn't apply. The only problem with that is that there has been numerous cases where the courts have rejected that argument. I mean, numerous cases that have rejected. Now, it's different if there's an initial being used. Like I told Harold a long time ago, there was a case. It's actually a Supreme Court case in Becker v. Monroe Cattleman Company is where they used the man's initials and they rejected it, saying the initials were no part of the legal name, and they were holding the authorities of the full Christian name to be essential. There were numerous cases also that supported that. When something is capitalized, that's also known as a capitism, and that's defined as a word that changes its meaning. Sometimes it's pronunciation when it's capitalized. That's on the online dictionary of language technology. That's where I found out. So there's different contentions to this about as far as the name, the spelling of the name. And in my opinion, once again, it all goes back to jurisdiction. Now, the research that I've done in jurisdiction, from what the courts have said before, is that jurisdiction is conferred by citizenship and really doesn't have any much to do about the name. I'll give you some examples, some cases. Bank of U.S. versus DeVoe. Neither residence nor inhabitry is sufficient to give jurisdiction. Haskell v. Bailey. It is citizenship, not residence, of the party that confers jurisdiction and gives right to sue in the federal courts. Staglayer versus McQuinnon. Prima facie case of jurisdiction depends on citizenship. A mere advertisement of residence in a particular state is not an advertisement of citizenship in that state for the purposes of jurisdiction. There's Parker v. Overman. There's Robertson v. Cease. There's Denny v. Pirani. But there was also a case in Virginia where it also referred to that saying domicile. It doesn't apply to domicile either. Which sometimes you got to really do your digging, because the court has a way of talking out of both sides of its face. It might say one thing at a certain time, and then maybe decades later change that complete meaning. That was the Panel versus Ronquil case. That was 1980. But remember, domicile. A lot of people do claim domicile, and some courts have said domicile is synonymous with citizenship. But remember, domicile is strictly a political and not a legal matter. It's a choice of political affiliation, which even the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that no government can dictate our choice of political affiliations. And that was revealed in American Jurisprudence Legal Dictionary. I'd have to find the exact citation. To me, what I contend is that, especially being a Christian man, I contend that my citizenship is in heaven, as it says in the Bible, Ephesians 3:20, and also, Philippians 3:20, and also Ephesians 2:19, that it does talk about citizenship. And Remember this, because why I refer to the birth certificate, where most people try to attach themselves to that, and I do refer back to the Bible a lot, is that what it will say is just like when Jesus did trial before Pontius Pilate. Pilate said, "Don't you realize I have the authority to crucify you or set you free?" And he looked at him, he said, "No, you don't. You don't have any jurisdiction, or you have no authority over me unless the authority came from either heaven or God above." And right there, he knew he didn't have it, because what he did, he received all his jurisdiction from Caesar, sitting as the chief magistrate in a Roman constitutional court to pass judgment. And remember, at the time when Jesus was born, they basically left from not being registered. They went into Egypt, where all the other children were registered. And then, of course, later on, Herod had the decree where all male children under 2 years old were basically murdered. So he was never registered. He was unregistered. So that made a contention, because there's a lot to be said, because actually birth certificates were, even back then in Roman times, where this is why the first century Christians were persecuted, because what they did, they refused to have their children registered through the Temple of Saturn, which is basically their Department of Vital Records. And because of that, they were persecuted. They would not register their children, because what that would do is when they'd register their children, they would receive a white stone. That's also in the book of Revelation. It was called a tessera, which basically showed others that they were entitled to certain governmental benefits and privileges. And there's many things throughout that it talks about in the Bible, that it talks about not contracting with government. As a matter of fact, in Exodus, it says, "Do not create covenant with them or their gods." The term God in Justinian Concordance means ruler, judge, and also a deference to magistrate. Okay? Then it's just like we've all seen the phenomenal movie The Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston. And if you watch the beginning part, Cecil B. DeMille says a very profound statement. Are men the free souls under God, or are they property of the state? And what most people don't really understand is that the Hebrews at that time actually contracted with the Egyptian government because they could not protect themselves. And what the Egyptian government said is, "Oh, yeah, okay, well, what we'll do, we will give you free food, free protection, free housing, but in exchange, reciprocal obligation, you've got to give us 20 tallies of bricks by every man and woman." And then what happened? The laws became more and more oppressive until God, through Moses, took them out of the jurisdiction of Egypt. And then he said, he commanded the people through in Deuteronomy 17, he said, "Never come back this way again." Unfortunately, they all started doing it again, started contracting with government. And just like even what it says in Psalms, it talks about eating the king's table is a snare. Then Paul reiterated that in Romans, saying eating from the king's table is a snare. It actually says in Proverbs is that if you eat the king's dainties, it's better that you put a knife to your throat. So it's all about those benefits and privileges that you're getting from the government that really ensnares you into the jurisdiction. Not only even the citizenship, and citizenship is not a right, it's a privilege. That's Ex parte Fung Sing. That's also Elk v. Wilkins, that the courts have said it. The natural right is actually nationality, because God makes that determination of where your birth of nativity is. But citizenship is actually, even Blackstone wrote, is that it is in an inheritance from the feudal system of a mutual relationship between the lord and his vassal. Vassal means slave, subordinate, bondsman. So once again, it's going back into that type of reciprocal obligation, quid pro quo. So that's how I look at it. Now, I've done everything in regards to you know, I registered the assumed name. I also authenticated the name as well. I went through the city of New York, the county of New York, the state of New York, and then I also went through the U.S. Department of State in authenticating that name. So this way, it cannot be misspelled or misabbreviated, or they cannot abbreviate it. Because this way, I could say, no, that's I don't even recognize that name. I don't know who that belongs to, but you got an abbreviation there, and you could even say the U.S. Supreme Court has even said that in Becker v. Monroe Cattlemen Company, it's no part, doesn't apply to me. And of course, they'll do anything they can to try to entrap you. But anytime you go into court, that's always the first matter: is jurisdiction. Do they have jurisdiction, either in persona or subject matter? I don't know. I think that's kind of pretty much my spiel. Is that 20 minutes?
Yep, you're about 3 minutes over. You didn't hear my little funny little noise. But just really quickly, because I know that you had to jam a bunch into 20 minutes, and there's a recording of this, everybody, with a playback number. And I will tell you that I've been absolutely under the with my schedule, and there are calls that have not made it onto the House of Prayer, myhouseshallbecalled.com website, which are expected to be there by Sunday, or so the hope is. So they'll be the last ones, including the last previous two calls where we did the series on Law Guru Magnetism, where we tried to address, without calling any names, we tried to address the sovereign citizen gurus in our midst that seem to pop up like mushrooms. But you know where mushrooms grow, right? The Russians really grow well and on certain substances. And we try to put some of that to rest 2 weeks in a row. And this week we've been looking forward to this call, and this will be hopefully on as well by Sunday, or you can use the playback number, 717-908-1837, and this call will be available on that number for at least 2 weeks. Unless something urgent comes up, we have to make another call, but normally it stays for full 2 weeks. So, Darren, just really quickly to sum up, your use of the name, if I've understood you correctly, is you've taken the name that was given on the birth certificate, but you've registered a name that looks just like that one that you are now the name holder of as a registered agent, and you took your name that describes you, and you've put a relationship with it, created a persona, an ecclesiastical persona, where you've got an ecclesiastical assembly to acknowledge your name, and you've got some certain credentials that were given by that ecclesiastical court. I was really interested in you telling how you use the name. So that's what I extrapolated. Maybe somebody else got something else. Correct me if I'm wrong, or elaborate, please.
Yes, and that's what I did.
Okay. All right. If anybody's not on the call, I'm going to go ahead and mute out the people that make noise. But don't be offended if I do that. I just do that for the sake of the recording. You can also *6. I will come back and unmute you when we have our open session. So for those that were making noise on the call. But did I miss it, or did I say it completely there?
No, I think you put it in a nutshell very well. And basically what I did through this process, and in my opinion, I basically sanctified myself. In other words, I set myself, my real self, apart. And the thing is, because of what I did in the ecclesiastical tribunal, it was by a what's known as a court order. It was like a court order is what it does. And by doing that, it registered, and then I registered it, and then I showed it publicly saying this is who I am, and that other name does not apply to me. So this way there's a definite contention or a separation between the two. So no one could come back and say, oh, yeah, but it's, and I had this issue with a judge once, and they kept saying, your birth certificate, well, that's not mine. What do you mean it's mine? What evidence, what proof do you have that it's mine? She couldn't answer me. And she didn't like being called to task on it.
So practically speaking, when you receive something in a mailbox, if you do, assuming that you receive a piece of mail and it has a name on it, now, if I've understood you correctly, if it doesn't, if it's not styled exactly like it's on your birth certificate, it has nothing to do with you anyway, if I've understood you correctly in your presentation.
Well, like I said, I use a different name. The first name is what I kept because that's actually my Christian name.
So
is the first
you don't
name.
Do any more. You don't do any more business in a name on your birth certificate whatsoever.
I can if I wish to because it's still an assumed name.
But you don't. You said.
Right. I haven't. I haven't for a very long time.
Yeah, and that's where I'm trying to get down to it. Now, folks, just while I'm doing this, just so you know, many of you that know me know that I'm very opinionated, and I can jump right in, too. I choose not to, but what I'm doing right now is extrapolating one man's use of the name and just trying to put all things out there on the floor, not for or against, but just an explanation, because as you will hear, the next speaker will have something completely unique, or many of the same things, but some uniqueness to it. Now, I'm not doing this because I'm trying to press confusion upon your minds, because that's the furthest from the truth. So what I'm really doing it is to get everybody to think about the subject with clarity, because if you don't know all of the facets of the argument, you can't make a complete decision. You're making an incomplete decision. You're not based upon all the facts. So just using this platform to hear different ideas, I really appreciate you sharing there, and you can say more in 20 minutes than a lot of people I know. And I just wondered if you've got these placards all over your walls with the Supreme Court cases that you...
You're breaking up.
Can you not hear me?
Barely.
Is that just Jake's phone, or am I breaking up to everybody? Okay, well, and I may not, it may be my signal or getting ready to have a storm. How does it sound now?
You're good.
It sounds clearer now.
Better. It sounds like you need to talk directly at your phone.
I'm literally speaking 3 inches with my mouth spitting all over my screen.
There you go, buddy.
I can't do, I mean,
Daniel.
Okay, good deal. Anyway, my point was, thank you, Darren. I was trying to make apologetics to everybody about the reason why we're going to have different opinions. The subject is pretty vast, and we're going to have an open time at the end of the call for discussion and questions, because I'm sure some will be raised. I just wanted to make one small correction for the record of the recording. It's not the Federal Judicial Center. It's the Federal Judicial Television Network of the Federal Judicial Center presentation on the YouTube that you're looking for. And it is a, like Darren said, it's right there in Title 28 there at the bottom of, I think it's 132, Title 28, 132 or 133 or 134, somewhere in that area where they mention that. And you can get a presentation of an understanding of how they danced around a registered organization and how that name fits the exact description of what these judges and lawyers were talking about in regards to a registered organization. Thank you so much for that, Darren, for that expose. I am excited about the second second guest I'm going to put on the show. Charlie, are you there and ready and ready for the bat?
Yeah, I'm here. I thought you said I was last, but I'll go whenever you tell me to.
You know what it was I accidentally put an email out, and the actual one that is going last, I think, was going to be John, and then I actually gave the wrong email out to a bunch of people because I was going to give him the opportunity, I think, to go last. So I apologize for that. That is my human error. So
you
if you're
Harold's
ready to go
not
now.
Speaking?
Who?
You mean Harold's not speaking tonight?
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, okay.
But I sent it out to John as well, our brother John in Texas. But I sent the same email with the information about being last to three parties. so anyway, the only person I didn't let get that that text message about being last was you, Darren, because you said you wanted to go first.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You didn't get that one. So no confusion there. But if you are ready to go, Charlie, where do you want to be in the lineup?
It doesn't matter. I'll go whenever you tell me to.
All right. Well, I'd like to do it at this present time, and I would like to ask you, personally, from my, I heard you need to be a little closer to your microphone.
Well, yeah, I'm about as close as I can get, too.
So okay. That's bizarre. You sound really soft to me. But go ahead. It's all
well,
you.
I'm not soft, I'll tell you that much.
Yes. Hey, folks, this is a good friend of mine that we've known each other so many years right now. And as far as the information of the name, this man has definitely lived his convictions. And as a, giving you a primer for an introduction for Charlie to take it off with, this is not somebody that just has an idea. This is a conviction, and I will be an eyewitness. This is life conviction. So these aren't just things he thought of in his spare time that he talks around in the man cave about. These are things that he lives. So, Charlie, with no further ado, please take it and give us what you know about the name and how you understand the name and what you do in regards to a name. All you.
All right. Okay, Daniel. Well, I have been an unapologetic follower of Christ for my entire life. I was raised in, and I use the word, quote, church, because I think you know what that means when people say quote or they do the air quotes or whatever. I don't give any credibility to that organization whatsoever, but I was raised in it. I was raised by a Baptist preacher and ended up going to two Bible colleges, worked in two Baptist churches after I got done with a Bible college, and I've ended up turning my back on virtually every single thing I've ever taught in those organizations. I've never thrown out the Bible. I've never thrown out Christ, but I've certainly thrown out the teachings of that organization called church. I was about 20 something years old, early 20s, maybe even at the end of my teens, when I began to realize that there was some real problems in claiming citizenship with men's governments. And so since that time, I've never done anything with men's government. I don't have driver's license. I don't have tags on my car. I don't pay their taxes. I don't do anything that I have no relationship with them whatsoever. And in my walk with Christ, I had often wondered why so many Bible characters change their names. And so after studying it for many years, I believe that I came to the proper conclusion as to why they changed their names. And in a nutshell, it was because the names that they had used prior to coming to Christ were names that were recognized by their affiliation with whatever man's government that they found themselves under at that time. And so being born again, becoming a new creature, old things passed away, and behold, all things are become new. Part of the all things become new was they took a new name. And so my wife and I actually wrestled with it for several years because, you have the things of, what will your parents think if you change your name? What will your brothers think if you change your name? And finally, I realized that none of that matters. And so I was about 33 years old when my wife and I decided that we were going to change our names, and we were going to be no longer. Of course, she changed her name when we got married, many years prior to that. But we decided that we were not going to use any name that could have been found on the U.S. birth certificate, even though, and I might be getting ahead of myself just a little bit, I've never seen a birth certificate with the name that my mom and dad gave me when I was born. Never used it, never possessed it, never took it down to a government agency to get a Social Security number, a driver's license, or anything else that they require U.S. citizens to use that document for. And so I lived my entire life completely outside of citizenship of any man's government whatsoever. Then, like I said, about age 33 or so, I decided to go ahead and change my name. And I did exactly what Darren did. I kept my first name. but just changed my last name, and actually changed the name to Charlie, a Steward of Jesus Christ, and then just I go by the name Charlie Steward. Well, I've been left alone for many, many years living this way until 2014. An incident happened with my sons, and it drew the attention of the Missouri Highway Patrol. And the Missouri Highway Patrol headquarters in Jefferson City sicked a local highway patrolman on me and basically declared war on me. And, again, make a long, long story short, they ended up filing 11 felony charges that affected my body and 3 misdemeanor charges that affected my body. And every single one of those were because I was not using a name on a U.S. birth certificate. That is not something that I can't prove because I've got – I've got all. I don't know. Is someone else trying to talk or?
I muted him out, Charlie. Sorry about that. I can't get as fast as you want me to. I'm doing my very best.
That's okay. I wasn't sure if someone was asking a question or something. So anyway, they basically declared war on me, and all these quote charges were all because I would not use a name on a U.S. birth certificate. I have that in writing. I have the court documents. I've got the statements from the cops. I've got statements from persecutors. I've got statements from judges, all of them saying that I was committing felony forgeries because I would not use the name on a U.S. birth certificate. And so anyway, they went after me, and this lasted for 4.5 years, and I spent, you know, quite a while in their stinking jails because I wouldn't submit to, you know, the things that they wanted me to submit to. And ultimately, because I would not bow and would not capitulate, wouldn't accept the name that they kept trying to tell me was my name, which was just amazing because here I was 50-something years old, and I've got people that I never even knew, people not even in my life, trying to tell me what my name was. And I'm like, well, you bunch of idiots. How does a 50-something-year-old man not know what his name is, but you people do? It was just the craziest thing that I've ever been a part of. But anyway, the whole thing was an absolute railroad job from day one, and I kept telling my wife that if I could ever get in front of a court that had even the slightest bit of honesty, that court would laugh these people out of existence. And so finally, after 5 judges, 3 prosecutors, I finally got a, quote, judge that I felt like, and it's such a crazy thing because Daniel had a run-in with this same guy, and he just brutalized Daniel, just treated him really, really bad. But for whatever reason, I don't know, this final judge who they brought in from a different county actually – I feel like had some decency and some honesty about him. But anyway, we were having a hearing, or what I really referred to as speakings too, because they were never really hearings. I never got to be heard on any of this. But this particular judge just told me, he said, I understand that you say your name is so-and-so, and the state says your name is so-and-so. Well, for the purposes of everything going on in my court, your name is, and he said the birth name. And I said, no. I said, that is not my name. And he said, yes, it is. And I said, no, it's not. And he said, well, it seems like one of us is right and one of us is wrong. And he said, what you need to do is you need, and this is, of course, after him telling me that he can't provide legal advice. So I can't advise you legally. Can't give you legal advice. But if I were you, I would file a writ of prohibition or a writ of mandamus with the Southern Missouri Appeals Court and let them decide, because one of us is right and one of us is wrong, and they'll sort it out. So I did some research and figured out how to write that document, and I ended up writing a writ of prohibition, and I filed it with the Southern Missouri Appeals Court, and within 24 hours they ruled in my favor, and which just blew my mind, because after going to these courts in the county, I don't know, probably 30 or 40 times, and constantly just being railroaded and steamrolled and told to sit down and shut up, and on they went. And by the way, these 11 felonies and three misdemeanors that they were alleging here, they were going after 98 years in prison. And it was all because of the name. And so anyway, so I filed this document with the Missouri Appeals Court, and they ruled in my favor within 24 hours. Well, they demanded the persecutor and the judge to file a response, and they only gave them 48 hours to respond after granting me a temporary, whatever they call it. But they gave them 48 hours to respond. The persecutor completely ignored them, which they should have been held in contempt of court, but they weren't. But the judge responded, and the judge said, and this is amazing, in the opening paragraphs of his response, he said, and this was obviously after reading my writ of prohibition, but he admitted two times in the opening paragraphs, I was wrong. And the exact terms that he used was, I made an erroneous ruling. And so, anyway, what he told the Southern Appeals Court was, let me fix this on the local level. So they allowed him to fix it on the local level. The next hearing that was scheduled after that all came out was still another probably 6 months down the road. And so, anyway, we got to that that quote unquote hearing. And the judge got up there and just blew my mind. And the first thing out of his mouth was, I have to apologize. I was wrong. And I just couldn't believe that I was hearing one of these pompous, arrogant, fill-in-the-blank people actually say this to me. But he did. And then from that point, within the next 30 days, the entire thing was over. After four and a half years of dealing with these people, once this judge said I was wrong about, and because the issue was he said that in the state of Missouri, the only way that a man can change his name is statutorily going to court and changing your name. And of course, I told him that that was absolutely wrong, and he had never heard, and this is amazing, of another procedure for name change. And I said, you guys realize that if you were to win on this level, you would instantly make nearly every single woman in the state of Missouri who changed her name via common law when she got married, because women do not go to court and statutorily change their name when they get married. I said, if you were to prevail on this, you would instantly make every woman in Missouri that's married and changed her name, you'd make them a felon overnight. That's how just ridiculous the whole thing was. But anyway, so that once he admitted that he was wrong, then because all of this was based on the fact that, every single thing that they came up with was related to this man refuses to use a name on a birth certificate. And so once he made his ruling and made everybody know that he was wrong, within 30 days the whole thing unraveled and it was all over after fighting for them for 4.5 years. So, Daniel, I probably went less than my 20, but that in a nutshell should give people a real good idea of where I'm coming from.
So what you're telling me, Charlie, is that, and I'm going to just, can you all hear me? Just going to hope that am I heard or do I have problems? Can you hear me?
I hear you perfectly now. You were really fading in and out, but you're perfect now.
Okay.
Yep, you're good, Dan.
Thank you. Okay, so I just wanted to say a couple of things on regards to this. I witnessed all of this, and I will say had firsthand knowledge of many of the stages of this event, except for the personal experiences and the arrests and all of that went in with that. But Charlie lived his faith and what have you. As far as being brutalized by the judge, many of you know that our experiences are a growing experience. And I actually, looking back, could find a half a dozen reasons of why I actually was in contempt of court. And what Charlie was talking about was the man ruled against me and put me in a cage for 27 days. That's in my past. Some of you have done more. Some of you have never been in jail. Of course, I know that I was in there with the best. Charlie spent some time in those places. Sometimes for our learning experience, for our faith, and for our knowledge that the system does really exercise its might, whatever that might be, is good for us all to know that, to count the cost. That's why previously I might say, for those that haven't heard the previous two calls on law, guru magnetism, I'm just giving you a commercial. They will be up on myhouseshallbecalled.com on the webpage under the call recordings that you can go back and listen to. Hopefully by Sunday they will be there. And I encourage you, because in all this, and when we talk about names, and we talk about taking on different natures and different personas and different what have you, there's a tendency for some people to go into Babylon, rack up a lot of bills, and say, you know what, I want to take these toys, and I just want to, and I want to change my name and disappear. See, keeping in mind that this is a really interesting concept, because there's a lot of ways our minds can go and a lot of games that we can play when it comes to changing one's name. I'll say that never is any, in my intent, and I don't believe in any of the intent of anybody here on the call, that we would suggest changing your name to defraud somebody of an obligation that you have contracted yourself into. So with that disclaimer on there, and also the disclaimer about being brutalized, he actually didn't hit me with a frying pan. Charlie, I think that the people may want to ask you, do you do any commerce and use that name somehow at all that's recognized in commercial transactions?
Can you refine that question a little bit more?
Well, does your name ever appear on something that might find its way into the public? So the public described as not like a letter between you and me in my mailbox and your mailbox. The public would be like, does it appear on a record with a public utility company as a person in the public? Does it have status and somehow is it in commerce in some way?
I do have an electric bill. It's in the name of our ministry, which is also obviously unregistered, which would be the same thing. It would be the same thing whether I'm using the name, you know, Commonwealth Missionary Alliance, or whether I'm using the name Charlie Stewart. Both of which would be considered unregistered in their system. So, but other than that, there's nothing. No, everything else I do is private, Daniel. I don't have any type of relationship with. I'm just trying. I mean, our phone bills are we have, you know, just anonymous cell phone plans. So, No.
No certificates of titles. No. Well, see, even the information that goes into the public would be any document that would appear in a public database. When I say that.
Right. Right.
And so,
no.
So I, the fact that there's an electric bill done in an unregistered name that has no legal existence is probably where they've got the concept of fraud or forgery in, because the has no legal existence means they can't pin it like the UCC-9 talks about as a registered organization. So in my opinion, just for the sake of putting this out here for the listening audience, I think Charlie has successfully proved that he can be an unregistered organization even. He said name and organization. The court dealt with the name. He's doing business with the electric company in an organizational name, as if there's a difference, though, in that respect, because it's being used and it's opened the ability to have an exchange with within the system. So for clarity, did I get that right? You use both unregistered.
Yeah, I would
you've
say
used
that,
two unregistered names.
Yeah, exactly. And
okay.
one of the felonies, and again, this is just absolute pure ignorance, Daniel, on the part of these state actors. I bought a car from a guy out of Springdale, Arkansas, and he gave me a bill of sale when I bought the car, and the state of Missouri called that bill of sale forgery, because the name that this man in Springdale, this private individual, sold me this car and gave me a bill of sale for the car with the name Charlie Stewart on it. This Missouri Highway Patrolman called that felony forgery. My car. This was my car. I mean, this was not like, you know, somebody got a hold of somebody else's car title and forged their name on it to make it their own when it wasn't theirs. This was my car that I entered into a private purchase with a man in Springdale, Arkansas, and the guy gave me a bill of sale with my name on it, and these brilliant legal minds here in Missouri called that felony forgery. So I don't, you know, I don't have a driver's license. I don't have any of that kind of stuff. And I call myself a citizen of the Commonwealth of Israel. I believe that's the nation of God. It has nothing to do with the Middle East. Don't misunderstand that. But it's right from Ephesians 2:12. Darren even referred to that passage a little bit ago. And so I have a document that I carry with me, and it identifies me as a citizen of the Commonwealth of Israel. Well, they called that felony forgery. And, I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous, the stuff that they were trying to come up with. And ultimately, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's probably people listening tonight, Daniel, that have heard me, you know, talk with you about this stuff before. But the night this cop arrested me, we're sitting in the booking room of the jail, and he looked at me and he said, "I did not arrest you because of the tags on your car. I did not," which were Commonwealth of Israel tags that I just make myself. He said, "I did not arrest you because of your ID. He said, "You are here because of the books on your website," is what he said to me. And the books on my website are, they're simply books. They're all scriptural. They're all biblical in nature, that said, "Hey, this is why I live the way that I live." And one of the books, he had told me that he'd been carrying around in his police car for over a year while he was doing his, what he called his exhaustive, extensive, year-long investigation of me to uncover my true identity and my intentions. And, you know, he told me that he had, this is an exact quote, he said, "I have spoken to everybody that knows you in two counties, and I cannot find one person to say anything unkind about you." And yet, this guy was bound and determined to, as he said to me while we were sitting in jail, he said, I have made it my personal goal in life to make sure that you spend the rest of your life in prison. And this was all because I refused to use a name on a U.S. birth certificate. Now, I'm sure there are people out there thinking, there's no way, this guy is nuts, there's more to the story, but I'm telling you, and of course, Daniel, thank you for being the witness. I've known Daniel for over 30 years. We used to be nearly next-door neighbors. Daniel was with me in this fight, helping me with paperwork along the way. So he knows exactly what happened and knows what was going on, and it was as crazy and ridiculous as what I'm saying, that this was all because of the fact that I refused to use a name on a U.S. birth certificate.
Now, I know that I'm a little ahead of myself here, but I want to interject that this story, at this point of the story, yes, I agree with everything, and I am a witness. And he just confessed here on this broadcast that he's a repeat offender of whatever it is that he is alleged to offend with, because it's his lifestyle. So he's not stopped. In other words, he's continued to do business after he's got out as usual, meaning his business is he's about his father's business as Charlie Stewart of Jesus Christ, or otherwise known as Charlie Stewart. He's kept his name and he never stopped. I would like to describe this, Charlie, through having some of you who might know, and I'm not getting making this about me, about my my experiences with the word felony forgery, but from having looked at it, I do believe that there's a statutory world that for those that are within their responsibilities, acting a part as agent for that registered organization that Darren spoke about, I do believe the statutory scheme, if they attempted to do something that Charlie was doing, that the felony charges that they were attempting to put on Charlie would apply. Now, I know that may sound real strange to some of you, but it is my personal opinion that they, the U.S. citizen who has not changed nature or has the other something that has standing in and have a legal effect, meaning it squashes every fiery dart of the enemy, they would probably have served the time if they used a different name. But there's, which makes it to me, it's my personal opinion, that this was an issue of jurisdiction, and Charlie preserved his jurisdiction of the kingdom of heaven. Not as much an issue of we've made a real dent in man's law and made a case precedent over this. I find that Charlie made more of an impact for the argument of the kingdom of heaven than many things I've heard. So that's why I wanted that to be you to be part of the lineup, Charlie, about use of the name.
Right, and I appreciate that, Daniel. And I'll tell you something else. Every single document that they sent to me, they always sent it to the name that my parents gave me when I was born. And every time they sent it, I would take it, and I would mark through it and write on the envelope, no one here by this name. And a lot of times I'd turn it over on the back and I would take red ink and write Bible verses on it about a man coming to Christ and having a new name written in heaven and things of that nature. And because, see, you understand that every one of these, the persecutors, the judges, oh, they all claim to be Christians. The cop that did all this, oh, I'm a Christian. Yeah, okay, whatever. But anyway, that's what they all told me, every single one of them. So, you know, I would, every time something came, I would send it back and never open it, but I would always send it back. And they would always bring that up in court, too. You know, we've tried to send him stuff, but he keeps sending it back. And in one time they held up the Bible verses in court, and which I was just really happy to see that. But anyway, after the Southern Missouri Appeals Court set this guy straight, he said in court, he told the prosecutor and he told the clerk, he said, do not send this man another document with his birth name on it. And the persecutors absolutely exploded. I mean, they nearly had a conniption fit. And he told them, he said, do not send him another document with his birth name on it. He said, if you send him anything, then you just send it to Charlie. That's it. He said, you just send it to Charlie. And so from that point forward, everything else that was done, every other time that he referred to me in court, he said it was that he only called me Charlie. That was it. It was really cool. There was a time when this thing finally ended, the day this thing finally ended, we had had a speaking to, and he said, okay, this you know, court is adjourned or whatever. And then he stood up and he said, wait a minute. He said, don't anybody go anywhere. And I thought, what in the world is this guy doing? And so he comes down off of his throne, and there's me sitting by myself, which is the way it was, you know, for these 4.5 years. And then the other guys, they had a whole table full of people sitting there. And of all the places that he could come down and sit, and I thought, because up until this guy, I mean, it was the cops against me, the persecutors against me, the judges against me, even the clerk was against me. And but anyway, this guy comes down and he sits down right next to me. And it absolutely blew my mind. And he looked at the persecutor and he said, Don, he said, not a single one of these are felonies. And I'm telling you, the persecutor absolutely exploded. He jumped up out of his chair and he charged toward the judge. And about, oh, maybe 3 feet from the judge put his arm out and pointed his finger and he said, Don, you go turn around and sit down right now. And for the first time through this whole thing, I actually felt like somebody in their system was on my side. It was a mind blower to watch it. But as that whole little thing progressed, it was just a few minutes later. And just like that, after 4.5 years, it was all over. And it all came down to the fact that these guys actually believed that the only way somebody could do a quote legal name change was statutorily. And I kept telling them, no, you guys don't understand. There is the quote common law name change. When you just announce to the community, you don't have to put anything in the newspaper. You don't have, all you have to do is announce to the community that my name is so-and-so. Just like what happens at a wedding when, you know, when people get married. You announce to the community, my name is now so-and-so. That becomes a, quote, legal name. Okay, there's a difference between a statutory name change, which is when you go to court and go through all that procedure and put it in the newspaper and all that kind of stuff and give, you know, creditors a chance to, you know, fight against the name change or whatever, or just let the creditors know that so-and-so who owes you money is now going to be called, so, you know, this new name or whatever. But both, taking a new name simply because you want a different name, or going to court and going through the statutory process, both of those are, quote, legal name changes. Just because you don't go through a statutory procedure, that doesn't mean that the name that you choose for yourself is not a, quote, legal name, because it is. For all purposes, it becomes, in fact, not that I really care, but I mean, I did point them to their own documents where it says that the, quote, common law name change, when a man does that, that becomes his legal name in so much that he was born with it. So anyway, but there wasn't, none of these judges knew this. They thought the only way that that someone could ever change their name was to go through the statutory process. And anyway, once they realized that they were wrong, then the whole thing just went away.
There you go, Charlie. And it may be possible that that is the way it's supposed to be for U.S. citizens. Who knows what their monkey shines means? That's why it's so very important that you maintain whose you were all along the way. And that's just my opinion here. But look, we're getting moving
Daniel,
forward here.
Let me just say one last thing. If I would have ever one time capitulated to the name on that birth certificate, Daniel, I'd be in prison right now. There's no doubt in my mind.
See, that's exactly what I'm saying. You came to the same conclusion. So acting in agency, you maintained your jurisdiction all the way from start to the end. And because the matter is confounded if you don't preserve your own jurisdiction. So the maxim says. Thank you, Charlie. That was pretty awesome. Are you going to be able to stay with us for the open session where people might be able to quiz and question and participate in an open forum?
I can.
Okay, well, then we've got Harold coming up next, and maybe John, and maybe Dave has something to say, and who knows if Ed, and we've got we've got time. It's not 9 o'clock yet, and so I know Harold might be chomping at the bit to be able to speak because he's been hearing a lot of good things, and I'm sure he's encouraged, and he's always been encouragement to us, and we're so glad that you participate, Harold. And with no further ado, I want to by the way, and Charlie, when he was talking about having a speaking to, that was Charlie's way of describing what we would call a hearing when he said a speaking to. So, you know, they called it a hearing. Charlie called it a speaking to. Harold, are you ready to go?
This is
Harold.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you, Daniel, Darren, Charlie, and the audience on the call. Charlie's story was moving, and it caused a lot of things to flash in my mind. It's particularly the reversal of the judge. There's a lot of things were going on there behind the scenes, but I believe, and this is just my interpretation of what happened, could be, could be not. But once the appellate court instructed the judge to do what it was ordered to do, the judge saw, or he perhaps was told, that being that Charlie held on to his lawful name, I don't even want to call his lawful name a legal name. Lawful and legal are two different things. And his lawful name, throughout the process, had a record of it. So therefore, he was outside, just like Charlie and Darren mentioned, outside of the jurisdiction of the state. The appellate court saw that it had no jurisdiction over Charlie. And once that was conveyed to the judge, he had a remorseful approach to Charlie thereafter. That was not by happenstance, but by design. And it's almost like when people become what they call state nationals, they get treated differently than the U.S. citizen who is deemed an enemy of the state under the Emergency Banking Act of 1933, which was formerly the Trading with the Enemy Act, with a few provisions to make U.S. citizens enemies of the state. So he never gave in to personal jurisdiction granting to the court. And that's what the appellate court saw. The court may have subject matter jurisdiction, but it did not have personal jurisdiction. And personal jurisdiction has to be granted. It's not assumed, especially if it's rebutted. It is presumed if you don't say anything, but if you rebut it with proof, the other side has to prove that the court has jurisdiction to proceed. So procedurally, the judge may have been unaware of this, but a lot of the lower level judges are not very articulate on the law. And that's why we have appellate court. But once he knew this, he did a 180 and was in your corner. He was upholding the law as far rather than the statute. See, the judges wear dual hats. They, because the organic constitution is still there, and they are operating under the what people call the corporate trust constitution. Between 1806 and 1871 was the amendment to that 1806. They can reach common law as well as their, what some people call statutory, admiralty, basically is Roman civil law. So they have access to both. And what he did is he put on the land hat to let you go. He could not do that under statutory because the statutes are binding. But your stance was not in statute land. You were still on the land pursuant to your lawful name. Okay. Let me get to mine. Unfortunately, I was not able to prepare the way I want to. So what I decided to do is use an active case on how I deal with the name. And actually, the way this panned out, I'm sort of like in between both. What Darren presented, which I have no objection to, and what Charlie presented, which I have no objection to. Maybe a little nitpicks here and there. But other than that, they were solidly on point, which goes to show that, as Darren had indicated, there is more than one way to skin the cat. And this is true based on his experience, Charlie's experience, and my own experience. So so what the audience is getting is options on the way to proceed. Now, Darren, he did a sanctification move, which is great. So did Charlie. I'm somewhat in the middle. And so what I'm going to do, I believe I mentioned this case on this call before. It was a case regarding my late father's estate, regarding property, and they had served a complaint. I basically returned everything, and then they came back. I did a motion to dismiss what they call a preliminary objection in Pennsylvania. So I'll be reading from the memorandum of law. It's not that long. And please note there are some edits that have been made for the sake of time and clarity. But I will start with a quote I often use in my documents I produce for myself and others. An established maxim of law that declares the importance of the name. In order rightly to comprehend a thing, keep in mind that word thing, inquire first into the names, for the right knowledge of things depend on their names. And you can find that in Black's Law 2nd at page 32. Now, before we get into the memorandum of law that I will be reading from, please keep in mind that a status foundation was in place before the motion was filed. This is an important point. I mean, this important point is the groundwork for how I deal with the legal name. I successfully did a status correction of the record on the state and federal levels via the State of Minnesota Assumed Name Certificate that Darren also mentioned, but I've done it much differently than most people. And on the federal level, with the United States of America passport, which incorporates an extensive explanatory statement. Some of you maybe saw parts of it, which how I ground myself with regards to nationality and allegiance, which is to the kingdom of heaven. So, what is the status correction of the record? Most people who speak of status correction talk as if their living soul status is being corrected. I don't see it that way. In my view, status correction is not about the man or woman. It is about correcting or updating the government's records regarding the birth certificate of state, which starts with the legal name and the office holder's position in the contract, agreement, or trust. As you will hopefully see or already know, the government does not recognize the man or woman, only legal fictions, which will be briefly mentioned in this presentation. Moreover, because our interaction with the state and federal governments is based on contracts, agreements, or trust, one does not want to be in the position of surety, the accommodating party, or the trustee. Accordingly, if the government's records are not corrected regarding the BC estate name and your office, the presumption is that you, the body, are the surety trustee responsible for the debt. So based on how I see things, the process of a status correction of the record, because of the status of the principal, the BC estate, and the office holder, both are fiction, are at issue, and not the living soul. Your status as a man or woman did not change in the government's eyes. First of all, they can't see you, but maybe in God's eye, especially if you were born again. The only thing is changing is the record. We want the status of the government records corrected because in many corporate proceedings, in and out of court, parties' corporate existence is presumed due to the legal names, unless one dispels the myth that they are not a corporate legal person or the surety for the corporate legal person in question. So naturally, we do not want this deadly presumption used against us. Keep in mind that the legal name does not have to be in all uppercase letters. You know, I heard that mentioned here also. For example, if the upper and lowercase name has an address with a zip code attached, that's the legal name. Now on to the memorandum of law supporting the motion to dismiss. As noted in the motion, there is one fatal issue as to why the complaint is ineffective against the undersigned and his assigned legal person, that is, the wrong names, neither of which pertains to the undersigned or his legal person. Accordingly, the undersigned responded only to prevent presumptions and assumptions to the detriment of the undersigned and his assigned legal person. Now, I'm quoting from a case, quote, "The word person in legal terminology is perceived as a general word that normally includes in its scope of a variety of entities other than human beings. See, for example, 1 U.S.C. Section 1, and this comes from the case of Church of Scientology versus Department of Justice, 612 F2D 417 on page 425. That came out of the Ninth Circuit in 1979. The state statutes will generally have a section listed entitled definitions. In this section of the statute, one will find a portion that reads similar to this excerpt. In construing these statutes and each and every word, phrase, or part thereof, where the context will permit, one, the singular includes the plural and vice versa. Two, gender-specific language includes the other gender and neuter. Three, the word person includes individual, children, firms, associations, joint ventures, partnerships, estates, trusts, business trusts, syndicates, fiduciaries, corporations, and all other groups or combinations. Note, however, these definitions in the statute does not list man or woman as a man or woman created by God, but as a man or other animals or the human body or other human animal body. Therefore, men and women of God are excluded from legislative statutes. The undersigned is not a legal person, nor an animal, but a man created by God. And I got a footnote there which shows through numerous statutes how the state and federal governments look upon people as animals. Man or other animals, the human body or other animals. They don't look at you as a creation of God. And then I also say, see Exhibit 2, the living testimony in the form of an affidavit of denial of corporate status with negative averments. So within that document, the undersigned mentioned a book by Lon L. Fuller entitled Legal Fiction, wherein in footnote 2 he stated, this book must be read for understanding of how legal fictions are used in the corporate judicial systems around the world. In my interactions with many attorneys over the years, I was astonished to learn that 99% were totally unaware of the use of legal fiction and their purpose, or they willfully told me a lie. So almost go back to what Charlie was saying, how the judge did not know. And in my experience, most don't know what we're talking about. This book made it clear to me unequivocally that I am not a legal fiction and that I must rebut the same. Otherwise, in the commercial world, I will be presumed or assumed and considered to be a legal fiction or a surety for the legal fiction. Accordingly, I refute such presumptions or assumptions here in this affidavit. And I'm saying the same applies here. And the undersigned has rebutted the presumption that he is John Henry Doe III or John Henry Doe, comma, J.R., period, in the complaint. And here's where I often state this with regards to the name. And we will be getting into that deeper because what Darren and Charlie brought to the table, I want to be able to show, or I will be showing, the how and the why it is what it is. And like Charlie had mentioned, the judge didn't seem to know the law. Well, in this document, I'm actually coming from a perspective as if the judges don't know a thing. And I learned that trick from Jerry Spence out of Wyoming. He basically says, when you're writing to the court, pretend they don't know nothing. So this is the perspective that I'm coming from. So back to the reading. The undersigned is not a name. The undersigned is not the name. The name is not the undersigned. I use those words a lot. Well, under the maxim of law, a name is, as it were, a distinctive sign or signifier of what? A man? A woman? A child? No, a thing. So a name is associated with a thing. An appellation, on the other hand, is attributed to as a title or name of a living soul. So when we use the term name in commercial terms, yes, you do have name in the Bible, but commercially, they have a special designation for the term name, and it's for things, and you will see a little bit more of that later. And it also goes to what we were talking about, how the government, the state and federal governments look upon the U.S. citizen as things, like cattle. And pretty much, based on, I believe Darren had alluded to it, the way to what was going on in Rome and during the time of the Catholic Church and of the kings and the royals under the doctrine of parens patrae, where the people are property of the state. So now we come into the name game. And I've been dealing with the name game for quite a few years, on and off, because as Charlie's case demonstrated effectively at that, that if they cannot get past the name, they cannot proceed. And I actually learned that from a guy out of Texas. When they would ask him, what is your name, which is a very loaded question, and I addressed that a little bit below, he would never admit to the name. Oh, I'm called this. I'm called that. My wife calls me an a-hole. So he never acknowledges the name on their paper. And they never were able to proceed. They were never able to proceed. So the acknowledgement of the name is essential, crucial, for them to play their game against the people. And what Charlie did, he refused to give in. He refused to acknowledge the name that they want to put on him. And because of that, the appellate court showed that they had no jurisdiction to do anything to him. They only get jurisdiction through the name. This is why I'm a strong advocate of doing the ANC, because you can split the principal from the office holder publicly. And when I presented that record to the passport, the Department of State, they went along with it. No objection. I had a few objections on something else, very small, but not to the core points that we presented in that, 30-some page explanatory statement, which gave high praises and glory to the Lord God Almighty, and they went along with it because they couldn't go against it if the so-called Constitution has any force in effect, because like I think Darren had mentioned, you know, they can't force you to any political allegiance, or maybe you said it, Darren, I forget. But at any rate, back to the name game. The name game is very tricky. Understanding what a name is and what it is not is essential knowledge when dealing with the legal system, not the lawful system, the legal system. The name game is a game played in the legal system to trick people into assuming statutory liability. The trick is to get people's agreement that they are to be treated and considered to be the same as the legal entity name. Let me read that again, because this is the crux of how they trick us in this identity trap. The trick is to get people's agreement that they are to be treated and considered to be the same as the legal entity name. That is the legal fiction. And I got a little footnote here. I'll just read two of them because there's three quotes here. A legal fiction, a rule assuming as true something that is clearly false. A legal fiction does not properly work, loss or injury. Fiction of law is wrongful if it works loss or injury to anyone. Those are two maxims of law to keep in mind. So as a legal entity name, then prosecute the people as though they were identical to the legal identity name as written on the paper used in the legal system. The undersigned does not consent to the names in the caption of this action, as they do not reflect the undersigned or his assigned legal person. The identity trap. For this trick to work, people must understand the importance of the meaning of certain words in legal land. Law is about the use of words. To begin to understand the identity trap, we start with the word identification. The word identification is related to identity, that is related to identical, which means the same as. Accordingly, any ID cards issued by the government, passports, citizenship, driver's license, student IDs, et cetera, without disclaimer, creates a government identity used to link the man or woman who applied for the ID, link with a photograph on the ID card to be the legal person identified. Hello? Wow, that just threw me off course. Let me start off again. Accordingly, any ID cards used by the government, like passport, citizenship, driver's license, student ID, et cetera, without disclaimer, creates a government identity used to link the man or woman who applied for the ID card, link usually with a photograph on the ID card, to the legal person identified by other information on the ID card. Accordingly, the undersigned has made a public disclaimer. Public disclaimer, because this was on the public record, that he and the legal name are not the same and that he is not the surety for the legal name estate. And then say, see motion exhibit 2-4. A side note, exhibits 2 and 3 are relevant to this presentation. Exhibit 2 consisted of a letter to the process server with the assumed name certificate, the certificate of existence and registration, certification of the record, proof of publication, affidavit of corporate denial. And exhibit 3 was the durable power of attorney, foundational documents in this process. For the trick to work, it is essential that the ID document makes the applicant agree. See, this is voluntary. It's essential that the ID document make the applicant agree by his application for the same to be the same as the legal person whose identity is associated with the ID document to impose statutory terms and conditions of the contract, agreement, or trust. That's a voluntary act. The ordinary meaning of the word identification, as would be used in a government issue identification with a photo, as something that identifies a person. Now, when we look at the definition of identification in its ordinary meaning, and these definitions come from dictionary.com, one, an act or instance of identifying, the state of being identified. Two, something that identifies a person, animal, or thing. And we go with that thing again. He carries identification with him. The ordinary meaning of the word identifies means to verify the identity of, as well as meaning the same as. Definition of identify as a verb. One, to recognize or establish as being a particular personal thing. Verify the identity of, to identify handwriting, to identify the bearer of a check. Two, to serve as means of identification for. His gruff voice quickly identified him. 3, to make, represent to be, or regard or treat as the same or identical. They identified Jones with the progress of the company. 4, to associate in name, feeling, interest, action, etc., usually followed by with. He preferred not to identify himself with the group. 5, biology, to determine to what group a given specimen belongs. For final validation, we check the meaning of the word same and discover that it leads back to identical. 1, identical, with what is about to be or has been mentioned. This street is on the is the same one we were on yesterday. 2, one being or identical, though having different names, aspects, etc. These are the same rules, though differently worded. 3, an agreement in kind, amount, etc., corresponding to boxes of the same dimension. 4, unchanging character, condition, etc. It's the same town after all these years. So, as a pronoun, 5, the same person or thing. 6, the same kind or category of thing. We're having steak, I'll have thing, but very rare. 7, the very person, thing, or set just mentioned. Slighted, substank, same. 8, the same, in the same manner, in an identical or similar way. I see the same through your glasses as I do through mine. So, all government issue identification with a photo with a man or woman's likeness, because it's not you on the picture, it's just a likeness of you, is a document used to prove that the applicant wishes to be treated the same as the legal person whose details appear on the document. This is the identity trap. Each entity is its legal person, that is, an artificial person, a legal fiction in law, with its benefits and liabilities attached. Some example of these many legal persons are citizen, teacher, student, voter, homeowner, driver, fisherman, truck driver, housewife, spouse, engineer, doctor, taxpayer, mother, father, etc. For each of the above cited legal persons, a man or woman plays a role for that position in society, as would an actor play a role on a stage. The English word for person is derived from the Latin word persona, which means the mask worn by an actor playing a role on the stage. The definition of persona, as a noun, a person. A person, the characters in a play or a novel. The narrator of a character in a literary work, sometimes identified with the author. The mask or facade presented to satisfy the demands of the situation or the environment and not representing the interpersonality of the individual. The public personality. 5, the person's perceived or evident personality as that of a well-known official, actor, or celebrity, personal image, public role. Names are designators of things. This is a big section here. And this is why I say, I am not a name, the name is not me, and I am not the name. The name game relies heavily upon the concept of a name. Therefore, we must comprehend how names are employed in the name game. And when I'm speaking about this, is this is strictly commercial, at law, in the public, not on the private. Names are designators of things, not the things themselves. Excuse me. Names are designator of things, not the things themselves. To designate means to point out, show, mark, or indicate. A name of a thing is not the same as the thing itself. A designator only points to the thing. It is not the same as a thing. The name of a person is handled in the same way. The name designates a person, but it is not the same as a person. The undersigned stated above that he is not a name, he is not the name, and that the name is not the undersigned. From an ordinary dictionary, we get the ordinary meaning of words. From the ordinary online dictionary definition, we check the definition of the word name, and we read that a name is used to designate, point to, or call things or refer to known things. From this definition, you can see that the name of a thing is not the same as the thing itself, but means it is a means to designate a thing. Now, the definition of name, as a noun, one, a word or a combination of words by which a person, place, or thing, a body or class, or any object of thought is designated, called, or known. Two, mere designation as distinguished from fact.
Can't get the fucking shit.
Thank you. He was a king in name only. An appellation, title, or epithet applied descriptively in honor, abuse, etc. Four, a reputation of a particular kind or given by common opinion to protect one's good name. Five, a distinguished, famous, or great reputation, fame, to make a name for himself. From definition one above, we see that a name is a word or a combination by which something, an item, is designated, called, or known. Thus, the name is not the same as the thing itself. I keep repeating that because that's crucial. Because people often say, my name is. We'll find out we don't own no name. The name is how we prefer to the thing. Definition two gives an alternative understanding of a name as a mere designation as distinguished from fact. What about the name of a person? The same principles apply. As an example, let us incorporate the word person from the definition of the name above. In this ordinary definition of person, as a definition number one above, the word person means human being, as commonly understood outside of statutes, redefinitions, where person has been intentionally redefined. The ordinary definition of person, as a noun, number one, a human being, whether man, woman, or child. Number two, a human being as distinguished from an animal or thing. Three, sociology, an individual human being, especially with reference to his or her social relationships, behavior patterns, as conditioned by culture. Four, philosophy, a self-conscious or rational being. Five, the actual self or individual personality of a human being. You ought not to generalize, but consider the person you are dealing with. Again, these are ordinary definitions from non-legal dictionaries. Therefore, a person's name is a designator of a man or woman by which the person is called or known. Nowhere in any of these definitions is the claim made that the name identifies the person or the man or the woman, and nowhere is any claim made that the name of a person is to be deemed as the same as that person. The name of the person is not the same as the person himself. Otherwise, there will be thousands of John Smiths in the world, each one being the same as the other. Therefore, it is a fallacy to presume that the name and the person are the same. All names are designators and only point to an object. The name game has been used to hoodwink the people into believing that a person's name is the same as that person, which is not true unless you agree with the trick, which most people have unwittingly done without knowledge. Okay, so by what name are you called? Outside of the legal system, the name of a person, that is, a man or woman in common vernacular, is that by which the person is designated, called, or known. Hence, a man can be called John, or known as John, or designated as John. Therefore, the correct way for John to refer to himself is to say, I am called John, or I am known as John, or I call myself John. Alternatively, John could say, my designation is John. However, if he says, my name is John, he may have unintentionally created a connection between the name John and his body. That's suretyship, or that's joinder. Depending on the meaning of the verb is in his statement. Unintentionally creating such a connection, referred to as legal joinder, may not be a good thing because of some unintended consequences. The legal system has a system-wide prejudice where the verb is takes on meanings of the same as, and all names are presumed to have legal joinder between a man and a woman and legal persons. So the verb is often construed to mean the same as. And all names are presumed to have legal joinder between man or woman and legal persons. That's the presumption. That's the way they operate. And I'm letting the judges know in this case, I know what y'all are doing. Therefore, people must rebut these presumptions if they wish to remain free from the entrapment within the name game, which the undersigned has done in this matter from the beginning with public proof. An example of the most popular meanings of is, and I'll just do one out of five because time is getting away, because all there's six here, only one applies. And that's number one. The same as, for example, he is himself. He is identical to himself. All the other ones they have here do not apply. The only valid interpretation for is to mean the same as is given by example one. He is himself because he can only be the same as himself. He cannot be the same as anything else. Since the legal system assumes that names are the same as person, one must rebut this presumption immediately. Otherwise, all that follows is based upon a false presumption, and the outcome will generally be devastating and harmful. Here, the undersigned has rebutted said presumption with publicly recorded proof in support. From the above six different meanings of the verb is, the most common meaning presumed to apply is the same as, which is a trick because one can only be the same as oneself, nothing else. The legal system has prejudice in favor of this interpretation because it supports the name game. Hence, anything that applies to the name John is now deemed to apply to one's body because said one has just declared that their body is the same as the name John, unless you renounce the presumed meaning of is. Therefore, it is important to know what you mean when you use the word is, just in case the name John is charged with any legal action. In the legal world, only a legal name is charged with statutory violation. So the legal enforcers need to get your agreement that your body is the same as the legal name that is being charged. Their objective is for you to agree with your designation, the name, is the same as their legal name to support the name game. Only with this agreement, or the lack of your rebuttal to the contrary, can they make you liable for any violations attributed to the legal name. With one's unknowing agreement, you can easily get tricked into creating legal joinder with the name with the simple, deadly question, what is your name? There are four tricks in this simple question. One for each word in the question. One, which meaning of what applies? There are over 20 meanings of what. What number two, which meaning of is apply? As we just went through, there's six meanings of is. And number three, which you is this question directed? There are at least three different definitions for you. Four, who owns the name being requested? Is it yours to begin with? So this trick question is used at the beginning of all negotiations and especially court hearings to create contractual relationship between the parties. You go to court, what is the first thing they say? You know, what is your name? Or would you please state your name for the record? Once you do that, essentially the ball game is over for the most part because you in the body had just accepted liability for the name.
Hey, Errol? Okay.
Yes.
All right, so that's about 20 minutes.
Well, Charlie had got close to an hour.
Huh?
I said, Charlie got close to an hour. I'm almost done.
All right, just.
Is this Daniel?
Yeah, this is Daniel. I was just wondering where you're at in the equation because of the time we're at here. I was just wondering where you're at. I'm kind of getting a feel on this.
Okay, I can stop it here. I think you got the point that I was trying to make. Let me summarize the rest. The question about the name is very essential. Who owns the name? For the most part, we do not own the name. And we definitely don't own their name, just as Darren had accurately described. The name that you're called by is sometimes called a private person. Some people even call it a private trade name. That's the given name from your parents, not the state. And I ended out after going through all of that there was no controversy in this matter. And pretty much I sent back everything and I told them that I will not volunteer to the subject matter under the maxim that equity will not aid a volunteer, and basically said if they want to come back, they have to come back by permission because the name was registered. And, of course, I have not heard anything since. So that's how I handled it. And I've handled others in similar fashion. And in most cases, you don't hear back from them. But this approach is very effective if it's done at the very beginning or at the onset of the proceeding. Because essentially they have to overcome the affidavit of corporate denial within 10 days. They have to overcome the ANC. And if they can get past that, then we can proceed. So far, nobody has gone past that, no entity. And I think that pretty much wraps up. Oh, the one case that Darren had mentioned from the Supreme Court regarding initials, Monroe Cattle Company versus Becker, 147 U.S., page 47, and that was from 1893, defended and pleaded by the name of A. W. Becker. Initials are no part of a name. The authorities hold in that a full Christian name to be essential, and that can also be doubled up with Bouvier's Law Dictionary, 1856, under name, basically saying that initials are not a name. And I digress.
No, brother, we got a mouthful. We do. Just really appreciate all that we have on the table so far, and hoping that we still have some of the others that we're going to jump in on the call. I'm hoping that y'all can stay with us. We might have to push things forward a little bit. I try to stop at 9 all the time. John, do you have something that you want to add to this?
Well, everybody's got their hook in a group there, it sounds like, on this name business. The thing that echoes throughout everybody's presentation is contact. And so what we're doing with this name stuff is we're avoiding making contact with the state. We avoid these perceived agreements and all that kind of stuff. The gentleman is talking about getting thrown in jail, working, you know, having everybody hammering for 4.5 years, I'd be retired real rich if I was him. Anyway, I think it's all in contacts. Now, myself, everybody pretty well knows that, you know, I don't have a driver's license or any of that kind of stuff, and, you know, how I attack the traffic problem and on and on and on. Well, my big thing is I've been trying to find out what the state computer says. Because I've been stopped with no driver's license and no registration and no inspection sticker and plates that's been on the thing, you know, the wrong state's plates and all that stuff. 74 miles an hour in a 60, and then they tell me to have a nice day. So as soon as they run me through the computer, then they want to get away. They want to get away from me. So the last time I got stopped, I told the guy, you know, we launched into our little song and dance and all that stuff. And I finally just told him, I said, here, I said, just run me through the computer and see what it says. So he goes back to his car. He comes back and he tells me, he says, oh, I says, well, said, I'm just going to give you a verbal warning on that registration there, and you have a nice day. And I said, what did that computer say? And he said, it says that we haven't had any contact with you. And I think that's what it is, because the way I am here, I'm in Texas, and I haven't had any contact with the state. So I didn't go running in and register any cars or any of that kind of stuff. And so, since they don't have any contact, and then the thing that I did in the beginning where I kind of wrote them a letter, I think the contact part part of what everybody's talking about creates presumptions that allows them to sink their fingers in you and make presumptions is hard to overcome. And that's what, and I'm not, I really haven't got too much into the name, except I know that that it's very important when you're dealing with these scum. But I'm not as well versed as everybody else on this thing. But what I hear coming from everybody is contact. And that's all I really have. I yield.
All righty then. We've got David. I know you always had something to say on the religious aspect of the name. Are you chomping at the bit to say something? And how about if you are putting your two cents in?
Well, everybody that presented tonight did a great job. You know, and as far as the name goes, I have a definition that comes out of Encyclopedia Britannica for legal fiction. Okay? And the all caps name is a legal fiction. And there's, if you want to do further study on it, take a look up constitutional fictions. And that's another interesting thing on the law of fictions. But this definition, short and sweet, is a rule assuming as true something that is clearly false. A fiction is often used to get around the provisions of constitutions and legal codes that legislators are hesitant to change or to encumber with specific limitations. I'll read that again. A fiction is often used to get around the provisions of constitutions and legal codes that legislators are hesitant to change or encumber with specific limitations. See, if they were to turn around and say the truth of the code, right, especially if you're the transportation code, okay, only corporations are required to register their vehicles and have licenses for using the public's road, okay? To make that change would sure put a kibosh on their little cottage industry by a huge amount. Most of the people, most of the time you go into a courtroom or traffic court, you may see a truck driver in there, but most likely you're going to see your neighbor in there. Okay, you're going to see the everyday person, not corporations. So, as far as Darren, Charlie, and Harold all did a great job of bringing the Bible in, and other than that, I'm in line with all three of them in that respect. So, as far as the name goes, it's funny because I a little story. I went to school with three other guys with the same name as me, all roughly the same age. I believe one of them's birthday is within a day or two of mine. Literally same year. So him and I, now his family, I never had an issue with it because I used to see his stuff showing up on my credit report. And I never had an issue with it. His family owned half of the area. So, that wasn't me. But our names would, get intermingled back and forth, all four of us. So when the cops in the area, they knew there's, the name David Horowitz is like John Smith. It's the Jewish John Smith. You may as well have, look in the phone book. They don't have them anymore, I don't believe. But if you looked up that name, they're all over the place. And I find it very interesting that I get confused with those folks all the time. Because I get people going, oh, didn't you just write a book? Can you send me a signed copy of your book? Last I checked, I didn't write a book. At least didn't have one published recently. So when people ask your name, a lot of the times it's better to ask, who's asking? Who's asking? Right?
If they don't know you, they're not familiar with you, then what is their claim? What can their claim possibly be against you? I've had people I use every once in a while. When I talk to public officers, I will use the name Annie, A-N-K-N-E-E, Adam. Basically, it means I am Adam in Hebrew, or I am man in Hebrew, actually. So I've had cops write down on the ticket. He said his name was something, you know, and they didn't spell it right, and, you know, trying to get me for using a false name. But I use very similar to Charlie and Darren, you know, the Bible. If I have to make a claim, I have all the evidence I need right there to back it up as it pertains to who I am. So that's all I've got to say, Daniel. And I thank Charlie and Darren and Harold for presenting tonight.
Well, we still have an expert panel, and then maybe have people that want to join in. So thank you, David. Ed, do you have something on the name that's been you've been made aware of?
Yes, I do. I do, and this is going to be a little bit different because I'm not going to be doing a whole lot of reading. I'm just going to tell you the exploits of what I've been through. The nice thing about being me is I run into some very fine people, and I was talking in a podcast a couple of weeks ago, and one of the guests reached out to the moderator to get me to get my email address, which he gave him, and I started talking to this guy. He's out of Ohio, and I still don't know his last name. His first name's Ken. I don't know his last name, but this guy. The first thing we did was argue about what jurisdiction the courts were using, and we argued for 30 minutes. And then essentially what I said was there was just something about this guy that I was talking to. He's an older gentleman, and I'm 56, so, you know, that's saying something. So he's an older guy, and he said essentially, I told him, I said, we believe that it's an ad hoc jurisdiction. That's what I believe. I believe it's an ad hoc jurisdiction. I believe the same thing John does and David does. They just kind of make the rules up as they go along. He said, you're wrong. And I said, well, there's three jurisdictions mentioned in the Constitution, the common law, which we know they ain't practicing. Then there's the maritime and admiralty law, which we think they're doing a combination of because of the UCC and the judge's directed verdict of guilt. And he said, well, you're wrong. You're wrong there too. And I said, well, what are you going to tell me? They're practicing statutory jurisdiction, because I don't see any difference between statutory jurisdiction and ad hoc jurisdiction. And essentially what the guy said was, it's none of those. He said, they're practicing the law of agency. So everybody should look that up, the law of agency. I have done my due diligence in this because I didn't, I couldn't understand where he was coming from. I wasn't really that brushed up on the law of agency, but I looked it up, and basically it's an agent-principal relationship. Now, we're all used to saying there's a principal-agent relationship, but with the law of agency, it's just the reverse. It's an agent-principal relationship. So I asked him, how could they be possibly practicing the law of agency in the courts? He said, well, it's with the birth certificate. So now here's where we get into the name part. So what they did the state owns, everybody on here would agree with me. If they don't, they can go look it up themselves. But the state owns the birth certificate, usually the Department of Public Health or Vital Records or some agency of the state owns the birth certificate, and it's in all your statutes in all 50 states. The Social Security Administration owns the Social Security card. So you don't own it. You just have the use of it. You have equitable title, they have legal title. You have possession and use of the card or the driver's license or the birth certificate, but they have the title. because everybody knows a certificate of title is not the same thing as a title. So I said, listen, I'm going to listen to what you have to say because you're the only second guy I've ever heard mention the law of agency. So we're going to follow this through and see if we can't come to some kind of agreement. So he said, when the state created the birth certificate, what they did was you died and then this entity came to life. And so I understood what he was saying. I was tracking with him the whole way until he said that basically the state created a state agency, and you are the registered agent of that agency. So, and I could tell by the way this guy talked, he had some court time himself. Just some of the words that he used, he was, you know, we got into Rule Nisi and things that most people don't have a clue about. So we discussed the law of agency for probably a good hour. And basically, from what I looked up, and I'm just going to read you guys the highlights. I'll share this with Daniel and David, and anybody that wants to get a hold of my brief, you can get it from one of them. But basically, the definition of agency law deals with agent-principal relationship, and it's a relationship where one party has legal authority to act in place of another. Relationships that are commonly associated with agency law include employer-employee. So that's where you're used to the law of agency if you work for someone else. It can be, is it implied or expressed? So this is one of my questions, so I looked it up. If the agency is expressed, it's created by deed, verbally, without writing, or in writing. If the agency is implied, which is, now we're talking about the birth certificate, it can be inferred from the relation between the parties and the nature of the employment without proof of express appointment. Things such as a Social Security Act contract or a birth certificate contract where you became the registered agent for an all caps name. You can call it a state agency or an organization, but either way, he's got me convinced they created a state agency, and you are the authorized, the registered agent for that. You're the registered agent for service of process because the same name that ends up that's on your birth certificate ends up on the summonses you receive, if you want to think about it that way. Creation of agency. An agency is created when the principal names an individual as an agent by virtue of a contract or asks someone to make a delivery. This means that the principal is responsible for all actions taken by the agent, while the actions of the agent are analogous to those of the principal. This type of agency is usually enforced by a written agreement created through the power of attorney. Responsibilities for injuries to third parties. Again, we're talking about the law of agency. If an agency relationship exists, the principal is also responsible for any injuries caused by the agent to other parties. These may include injuries to a third party's financial interest, emotional injuries, or physical injuries. Now, here's where I want you to think about court as I read the duties of agents, which is what all of us are. We're registered agents according to the birth certificate. Agents have the following duties to their principal. A duty to account for monies received or spent while acting on behalf of the principal. A duty to protect the confidential information of the principal. A duty of dealing with a third party or the principal in good faith. A duty to act in the best interest of the principal at all times. A duty of loyalty to the principal. A duty to act with reasonable care and skill at all times. Think driving. A duty to follow and obey the instructions of the principal to the letter. Think statutes. I'll send the rest in an email, and anybody that wants it, they can get it from Daniel or David. So So anyway, going back to the conversation, so once I realized all this, we talked again a couple of nights ago. And, you know, I don't call him. He calls me. I've got his number, but, you know, he gives me some things to study, and then I look at them, and then I reason with them, and then I talk to him some more. And the second time we talked, he said, the reason I picked you out is because I listened to you. And he made sure that I wasn't a lawyer before he told me anything. And then he started telling me, look, because of the contracts that I've signed with the government, I can't lay it out for you. But I think if I point you in the right direction, you might figure this out. And that's what I'm going to try to do, because you said in your podcast that your mission on Earth was to help others. And so that's what I'm trying to do tonight. So he made me think about things in a certain way, the way he talked more and more about the law of agency. And I said, well, isn't a registered agent like a voluntary position? And he said, bingo. And then I said, then he started talking about the birth certificate. He said, have you ever ordered your birth certificate from Vital Records? I said, yes. I ordered 8 of them last year. And he said, okay, so when you got the birth certificate, what'd you do with it? I said, well, I got it authenticated, much like the earlier speaker was talking about with his riveting story, which it's hard for me to accept, but it's easy for me to believe that he actually went through all that because of the name. Anyway, getting back to what I'm talking about, he said, when you got the birth certificate, did you notice that it was signed? I said, yes. He said, does it have an embossed seal on it? And I said, yeah, down at the right lower-hand corner. And was it delivered to you? And I said, yes. And he said, well, think about that. Now we're going to talk about the law of contracts. He said, was it on bond paper? I said, yes. He said, so would you agree with me it's a security instrument? And I said, yes. And he said, so you got something from the state that was a security agreement or a security interest, he called it, that was signed, sealed, and delivered. Is that correct? And then, you know, of course, a light bulb went off. And I said, yeah. He said, what did you do with it after you got it? And I said, well, I got it authenticated. He said, do me a favor. Turn it over. Look at the backside of it. So I turned it over. He said, what's written there? And I said, nothing. It's blank. He said, that's the way the state works. They dare you. They know that people don't understand what a birth certificate is. Some might understand it's a security instrument, and they're always trying to get access to their trust, but they have no clue on how to do it. And that's all he said about it. So I know that something goes on the back of that birth certificate. Exactly what yet, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. Whatever it is, it's got to be written in red ink, and I imagine it's going to have... I'm sorry?
An endorsement.
Right. So I'm getting to that. So I'm getting to that part. So then we started talking about, he said, let me ask you something. When you got your sealed, signed, and delivered security instrument from the state government, did you send them an acknowledgement of receipt? And I said, no. You know, I paid the money, they sent it to me, and, you know, I got it authenticated. He said, well, if you don't give them a receipt, if you don't send them back a receipt, then there's no way to prove that the contract has changed hands. So that was my first clue. And then he said, we started talking about the registered agent, and then I said, well, isn't the registered agent, isn't that voluntary? And he said, bingo. He said, why not write a letter to your Secretary of State, make a copy of your birth certificate, after you figure out what goes on the back of it, send it to the certified mail return receipt to the Secretary of State, and rescind your position as a registered agent for the name on that security instrument. And I couldn't think of anything to say other than I can. Sure.
May I interject, please?
Yes.
Hey, okay, this is Darren again.
there's two things that I think you're not correct about. You do not hold equitable title. You hold legal title because you get a certified copy of that certificate. They hold the original. Just like if you look up the definition in Black's Third under certified copy, it says a copy of a document signed and certified as a true copy by the officer to whom custody of the original is entrusted into. The one who's holding the you're holding the certified copy. You're not a registered agent because a registered agent doesn't have any liability. You're serving as a trustee. The trustee is the one that always goes to jail or is always held financially liable, not a registered agent. That's why you could serve to the registered agent. He's not a party to a lawsuit. He's just basically standing there. That's the purpose of doing the assumed name, because now you have really separated yourself from actually being a registered agent and killing the presumption of being a trustee. Now, I did that back in 2015. I sent notification to 37 federal, state, and local agencies and did a letter of resignation and rejection of the presumption that I am either a trustee, a fiduciary, or a surety to that certificate. And I don't believe that we own it and that there are any real accounts myself. I believe, but because you are operating or have operated unbeknownst to you, which is actually somewhat of a fraud, you have actually operated as a financial manager of the registered organization. And that's why, and something that you mentioned as far as the law of agency, there was, you can check it out on YouTube. It's by Vince Dean, George Geis, University of Virginia School of Law. It talks about the law of agency, and I've put that in all my papers. It says one can be an agent without knowing he's an agent, which there are three essential requirements. One is an agreement between the principal and the agent, two, on behalf of, and three, the agent to be subject to the principal's control. But like I said, I don't believe that there's any accounts tied to it. I believe they created it and they control everything, because supposedly on the back of the certificate, if you look at when they fill it out, especially under your mother's name, they put maiden name. Maiden means an unmarried woman, even if she's married, which that makes you a bastard child, and a bastard child is not entitled to inheritance under common law. But it also means that the state has to step in under parent trees and become the guardian. I believe there's the guardian bond information that's put on the back. That's why they don't give that out. They don't want to set that up. They don't want to show you that. I believe that's what's on the back of the certificate, myself, personally. But that's why when you get a certified copy, that's omitted. That information on the back is...
You know what's interesting about all this? That everybody on this call is... I want to be the first one to say, because you're missing this. So, Ed, I know the fellow that you're speaking to, and so does Darren, and so does Russell that's on this call, and maybe a few others. You can find me and him having conversations from around 2013, maybe to 2015 or 16, online on the YouTube in quite a few places, and spent a lot of time. And there are people that have been on this call and that might even still be on this call right now. I don't want to put them on the spot. That have also seen a positive, very positive effect of a resignation of registered agents. Using information that we had derived from the understanding of agency with this fellow, so I know who you're talking about. I know his surname and fully acquainted with him. So does Darren. But we're not going to dive into and mention his name here on this call, and we're not going to make it a call about him specifically, Ed. But I absolutely agree with what you said. I'm a little bit different. I confess that I went and got a piece of plastic with a photographic image that looks like me after 29 years of not having one. And this call is not about me, but I do have a story that goes along with that. We are at the 9 o'clock hour. I didn't want to make this thing go on forever. And there might be somebody that really has a really valid question that all of the speakers might want to address. As long as we can do so with knowledge of the hour it is, I've muted out a bunch of people, and I only because of the noise. So if I unmute you and you begin to make noise again on the call, I'm going to have to remute you. So keep cognizant if you hit star 6 on your phone, if you are able to, if you're not speaking, to control the noise factor in the background. So like that. Star 6, guys.
Okay.
All right. Well, anybody have anything that they want to bring into the call at this time?
There's one other thing I wanted to say. There's actually also too in regard to the birth registration. Now I found this in the New York public health statutes, which actually there was a gentleman known as George Geiser of the University of Pennsylvania. And it's in the Law Review and American Law Registry back in 1908. And what he called it was a personal ficta. And what he said, real men are united to form a fictitious being, a fiction which holds property but has no natural rights. The personal ficta exists except by virtue of some creative act of the state. So what is the creative act? It's the registration of a birth certificate, a.k.a. vital record, which talks about the organization. This is also in Solomon Jurisprudence, section 112. It's talked about a double personality. He is one man but two persons. But on the New York – so I always thought, well, what's actually being registered? Well, under New York PBS – Section 4130, subsection 1, it says birth and registrations. It says each product of such a birth is considered born alive. For example, the registration of birth products includes umbilical cords, placenta, biological items. And also, too, is that the parents never do an acknowledgement of paternity. And that's where the state comes in, which in possibility, I can't really confirm this, but who's to say that the doctor doesn't do an immediate an adoption when the baby's born, where the state takes control of the baby because the mother has been deemed to be a maiden and an unmarried woman and has created a bastard child that needs that to be underneath that parent tree. Okay, I'm done.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Darren. You did have a little bit left in the kettle. Appreciate you pouring out the last drop for us. All right. Anybody else on there that's chomping at the bit? I'm over 9 o'clock. I promised I would try to break it at 9. You all have hung with me so far. Don't want to make it an extremely long night.
May I?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Well, I got a may I, and then can you hear me? I got a may
yes,
I first.
Okay.
There was a may I first
back.
Here. Sorry.
Yeah, this is Randy in South Dakota. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
I'm wondering if anybody on the call has heard of Roger Sales. He's making – have you heard of him?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
And so you know what his deal's all about. He makes a claim that if you do the affidavit with the can you help me here?
No, this is your story.
Oh, I got a mental block here.
He makes a claim of repatriating. Not repatriating from the matrix. That was his thing.
Yeah, by using the passport card. You apply for a passport card and you send an affidavit in it, and it's simple. And he claims that you're using their words, and he's been studying this for a long time, and I just I just wondering what anybody else thinks of it. If
that's from Surf the Sovereign,
I'll chime in.
That's from Surf the Sovereign, isn't it?
I'll chime in on this.
Yeah, hold on a second, Russell. I'm just making sure we're talking about the same guy.
I'm talking about Roger Sales.
I've heard of him. I don't agree with him.
Yeah, from Sovereign to Surf is his book.
From Sovereign to Surf. Thank you. Thank you, Russell. Go ahead.
I've got a copy of his book on my shelf, and I listen to his radio shows, and I attempted this back maybe 8 years ago, and when I started studying the law, I found out all the mistakes that Roger Sales has made. He claims to be a U.S. national, which is the wrong thing. It's a bad thing. And when he did his paperwork, he signed the DS-11 normally. He didn't do an explanatory statement and correct the signing statement. So he signed over as a 14th Amendment citizen, and he's got no proof because he left America and he hasn't been here since. And so, he thinks he has something. And I can tell you, four or five things on his paperwork was wrong. So I would not follow him. Everything else, I like him. I like the guy. I like his book. But his passport, no.
The term also, American national, is wrong also. A lot of people use that term wrong. Too.
No, that isn't wrong. The nationality is USA on the passport. USA
no, American
national,
that
not.
Was that was in that was in Hilson versus Germany, 1925, where even an American national owes their allegiance to the United States. And also that status.
I'll just tell you, on everybody's passport, it says USA national. Under nationality, it says USA. That would be American national, but it's not specific. It doesn't mean a state citizen or a federal citizen. That would include everybody under the jurisdiction of the United States of America. And if you didn't know, all written law...
I'm just saying an American national has been rejected in several court cases, and specifically because it's not contained anywhere in the federal statutes at large, which is typically codified.
Yeah, but
like
Roger Sales doesn't claim American
national.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm just saying, like a state national is under the federal statutes at large, and then it's codified under Title 18, and it's also found in Ann Juris and another place.
A state national is only it's a state citizen when you're in.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Okay. Because a citizen is.
Okay. Do you have a passport? Do you have a passport approved by the Department of State as a state national?
I don't have a passport at all.
Okay. Well, then you don't know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about mine as a state national. The term citizen itself means one who submits himself to the dominion of government. Black Law 6. That means you're a part of a political society. That's what a citizen is. Citizen and subject.
You're mixing a federal citizen with a state citizen.
Fellas.
You know, you're the guy who thinks a citizen is a bad word. And a 14th Amendment citizen is not the same thing as a state citizen. And obviously you don't hear that.
You're both correct.
There are numerous cases that call it ipso facto, that they mean the same thing, that even a citizen of a state, because they consider it intermingled, especially after the 14th.
Yeah, I've got about maybe 20 or 24 Supreme Court cases that say you're wrong.
Yeah, I got the same cases. You're not telling me nothing new.
Well, you're
all
not
right.
telling
me. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put this on pause. I'm going to put both you guys on pause for just a second. I do appreciate that there is a controversy, but as a moderator, I'm just going to request that for the sake of our listening audience, we don't really do well with conflict, and so the conflict level has raised to the point where the House of Prayers just want to step in, and so if we can agree to disagree on I've got this case and this case says this, and maybe you're both right, but for the sake of peace and harmony for the rest of the call, I'm just going to ask that we just move on because there was a woman that had actually chimed in and had a question, and we may not resolve this tonight because you both are very about your position.
I'm sorry I started that, and I yield.
No, you didn't do anything wrong by asking the question. Okay, there was a girl out there, a lady, somebody, that jumped in a second time.
Okay, was it me? Can
that
you hear me?
That sounds like you. Yes. Yes, that sounds like
okay.
you. Can you hear me?
Great. Yes, thank you. And I don't mind listening to people, I don't want to say argue, but it wasn't really arguing.
Yeah,
I mean,
don't
just,
worry about that.
I'm just not offended at all.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. But what's your question? It's the that's what we really want to know.
Okay, well, so there's this court case where I'll quote it. It says, a complaint must identify at least one plaintiff by true name. Otherwise, no action has been commenced. And that's Roe versus New York, 49 FRD 279. So I wondered if Harold or anyone else had comments on that. They call it the true name. And there's another quote that they talk about the name and jurisdiction being tied. And Harold was speaking to that too, that the name is a jurisdictional issue. So, you know, cases can be won just on the name issue alone. So,
all right, that
I mean,
was
that
a
was
statement
a...
of sorts. Yeah, I mean, do you want Harold to speak on it, or you want to open it up to public discussion? Because, Harold, are you out there?
Yeah, yeah, well, or if anyone has anything to say
is
about
something...
that, because I thought it was useful when that guy did bring up about Roger Sales, because when we're that is a technique, you know, people are trying to figure out how to address the records so that they are accurately referred to, and you know, a joinder doesn't happen. Some people call a change of name a change of assignment or a change of jurisdiction. You can see why it would have these similar meanings, because it has similar effect. So yeah, for discussion, or that jurisdiction and the name.
Okay, I'll answer.
Well,
that.
I'd like to. Okay, well, I was going to answer it actually, being that we're at the 9:19 in the evening. I actually was going to. I'm going to summarize it like this, because I haven't had a chance to speak, and there has been a lot of discussion tonight. I want to say that I understand agency, I understand the name, and I'm understanding that I got a new phone, and sometimes that people can't hear me. So if you need me to open my mouth louder, let me know. I'm seeing through all the conversations of all the participants in the call tonight that the situs, that means the location where the name is, was the most important part that seems to have been talked about but not really focused on. And to close the call up tonight and answer the question, because it was a perfect lead-in to my closing the call out, the bottom line is, if you own a thing, you can give it a name. I have possession of a dog. I named her Lucy. It is a principle that has been from, I believe, historically, the best that we know from the first of history, that names, if we go right to the scripture, Adam gave names to all the animals. They were in his possession to do so. And that is a law lesson that we're learning on this call tonight, that we can only own what we can only name what we own, and we can't own something else that somebody has named. There's that
like
quandary
a surname.
Right there. Like a surname. There you go. I'll do that.
The surname. The surname is a Roman war name.
And that hasn't come out in this call tonight, and I'm glad for you putting the spotlight on that. That there's much to be said about the surname, which is identified in law as over and above the Christian name, is in some of
your
the,
God-given name. Yeah.
Somebody says that some sources find that. So tonight, I want you to go, and we've had a very full night, a full belly. I want you to go with the peace of God. As I close this call down, I think it was an excellent call. Every participant that mentioned what they mentioned, including
I was really glad to hear that Ken was doing okay. You make sure you call Ken and make sure he has my current number, okay, there, Ed? And I really appreciate you all tonight. As I close this meeting off, I wish you Godspeed. Our next call for the House of Prayer is scheduled for the 24th, and I'm sure to get it close to the 9 o'clock hour when I stop. God be with you all. Thank you.
Daniel,